They're used to death, yeah? And even amongst people who are not so religious, the idea of a Calvinistic, when your time comes, this is your time. You think of the gravestones, you know, what they tended the inscriptions to put on it. You know, and I think some of that lament is regrets the tragedy of it and the suffering of the widows. But I think there is not so much the anger there for driving for... It's a lament rather than a call for further action.
Dr. William Jones expressing the heartbreak felt here and across the Atlantic in the wake of the tragic events of September 6th, 1869, the Avondale mine disaster. Speaking of the very human response, especially of the Welsh who lost so many that day, but also distilling the response by most people to a life defined daily by the risk of injury and death on the part of all of those rooted in the world of anthracite. They knew death.
Good Christians, all both great and small, I pray you lend an ear and listen with attention while the truth I will declare. When you hear this lamentation, 'twill cause you to weep and wail about the suffocation in the mines of Avondale. On the 6th day of September, 1869, those miners all then got a call to go work in the mine. But little did they think that death would soon prevail before they would return again from the mines of Avondale. The woman and their children, their hearts were filled with joy to see their men go to their work, likewise every boy. But a dismal sight and broad daylight soon made them turn pale when they saw the breaker burning o'er the mines of Avondale.
We're hearing a recording made in northeastern Pennsylvania as the first post-war field expedition by the Library of Congress in 1946, a set of recordings made by George Corson of the songs and ballads of the anthracite miners, as the album is titled. John J. Quinn of Wilkes-Barre sings here a ballad detailing the tragic events of September 6, 1869, when 110 men and boys were killed in a fire at the Avondale Mine in Plymouth Township, just across the Susquehanna River from Wilkes-Barre, the worst tragedy of its kind in the anthracite fields. And as we can hear when listening to the song, the ballad keeps alive the emotional core of the tragic story of Avondale through the use of stark visual images. We witness the burning breaker, the gathering crowd. We watch some of the families tearing off their clothes, tearing their hair. And most dramatically, it's a scene in which the searchers find a father dead with his dead son clasped in his arms so pale. Every year, the Plymouth Historical Society remembers the tragedy at the Avondale Mine and the victims who died there on September 6, 1869. And they've found a powerful and long-lasting way to do that they will unveil to the community and the world at large this year. They've commissioned award-winning artist and native of Plymouth, Joel Carson Jones, to create an original mural at the site on the occasion of the 40th anniversary of the Society's founding. Unlike the Avondale Ballad, though, what has been important to the artist and to the Historical Society itself has been to create a visual narrative that celebrates a positive vision of those who dedicated their lives working at the mine each and every day to provide for their families and the community at large. And we are invited to the unveiling of that vision on Sunday, September 13th, at the Avondale site in Plymouth Township. Members of the Plymouth Historical Society paid a visit to the WVIA studios with the artist who created the mural. to tell the tale of the Avondale mine disaster and give us a preview of the mural. We'll meet Joe Slusser, Society President, Patrick Smith, Vice President, Board Member Jim Yules, and artist Joel Jones. Joe Slusser lays out some history as we begin.
Plymouth actually does date back to the 1700s during the Revolution, but it wasn't incorporated until 1866. And that started mostly in the 1830s with the discovery of coal by Mr. Abijah Smith. And then as he started to dig the coal, more people started coming and digging more coal mines and finding more uses for it. And it became a pretty bustling town. Everybody thinks of it just an old coal town. It was really industrialized with dress factories, lumber mills, farms, and also bars. It kept a lot of the workers going.
Was it a one coal company town, or were there other coal companies?
There were multiple coal companies, many breakers, and one of which was just on the perimeter of Plymouth Burrows itself in the township was the Avondale, which is why we are here today to promote a mural by a local artist. And we entered into this project approximately a year ago, talking amongst ourselves that we thought it would be a great idea if we could have a mural down at the Avondale mine site. And when we first thought of this project, it was a matter of funding it, finding out costs, and the actual cost was a lot more than we thought it would be, but it was well worth it. And so we started a fundraising project and reached out to Earth Conservancy. And what they agreed to, if we got to a certain point at a certain time with our fundraising ability, whatever still had to be met for the financing of the project, they would give us, which they did. So once we had the funding secured for the project, that's when we commissioned Joel to start the project. But Earth Conservancy and its board, we need to thank them, give them kudos. And without them, it would have been years down the road.
Terry Ostrowski was the one that called us and said that they would make up whatever we didn't have.
We had a section of wall that we thought might be presentable for the project. And in the process of really studying the wall, we found it wasn't really a feasible idea to actually use the wall itself. So I took it upon myself to build a wall on the wall that would last and be able to support the entire mural, which is 8 feet high by 30 feet long. So I created a wall more or less out of concrete board and pressure-treated lumber, attached it so that it would be something that would last for many, many years to accommodate the entire mural. So this is where we are today.
Where is the wall then? Do we see it when we drive on 11? Or
you will not see it. It has to be accessed from an area which we're hoping gets completed, which was the rails to trails. And this was one of the main ideas behind this mural, that it would give a little bit of more of a push for completion of the rails to trails, which we feel is a very important project. And when it is unveiled, the mural, I'm sure it is going to be an attraction that is going to appeal to very many people.
How close to the river, Susquehanna River, is the site?
Well, it is probably about a half a mile from the river, and the location of the wall itself is not going to be affected by any flooding, if that's a concern. It sets up quite high, and that area has not ever been included in any kind of flooding.
Was it a retaining wall? What was the use of
it? It was part of the Avondale complex. There were multiple sites there that accomplished the operation itself, like the power station, office buildings. This pretty much would be a support wall because there was a lot above it. It's quite thick. It's approximately 30 inches to three feet wide, and it extends up at its highest point to 8 feet. And it is 30 feet long, but not in a good condition that would support the mural.
Can you tell us what happened at Avondale? What was the crisis? There was fire. There were people trapped. Tell us.
So we're looking at September of 1869. You have to think of how mining operations operated at that time. And one of the bad features about the Avondale was the fact that the breaker was built over the mine opening. So that was the place for access and egress. And it also served as basically the chimney for the draft furnace. If you think of the time period, 1869, there was no electricity, and steam was not something yet, you know, a conceivable thing to do. So in order to keep the air fresh in the mine while the miners were working, they used what was called a draft furnace. And the draft furnace was located approximately 300 feet from the mine opening itself. And along the walls of that opening was bradishing, which is actually lumber strips that were attached to the side of the wall as support. And on this fateful day, apparently a spark, according to the people with the power that be at that time, said that a spark had traveled the distance, ignited. I'm not sure exactly what it ignited, but it spread to the mine opening, the shaft itself, which led to the breaker burning, and the miners eventually were suffocated. They all died. There was 108 miners, and of that were five boys between the ages of 12 and 17, and two miners attempted to go down to rescue them, and they perished in their quest to try to help.
A consolation then was held, 'twas asked who'd volunteer, for to go down this dismal shaft to seek their comrades dear, to Welshmen brave without dismay, and courage without fail, went down the shaft without delay in the mines of Avondale. When at the bottom they arrived and thought to make their way, one of them died for want of air, while the other in great dismay, he gave a sign to hoist him up, to tell the dreadful tale, that all was lost forever in the mines of Avondale.
And the unique thing about the Avondale disaster is that there was unrest, labor unrest at that time, and a portion of the miners that perished in the disaster were from Scranton. So exactly why that was, but in conjunction with the Lackawanna County Historical Society, they also dedicate to the Avondale mine disaster, because in the Washburn Cemetery in Scranton, there is an area where these miners are interred.
And they were Welsh, weren't they?
They were Welsh. Yeah. And they were pretty much all from the same church in Scranton. But that's the history of the disaster. And there's many theories as to what actually happened, why. So you have to hear what his testimony at the time, and we can only guess what really actually happened.
And so you all are part of an historical society that has been, I see on your T-shirt, that 1986? So you're celebrating your 40th.
You've got the 40th anniversary. You've got the 160th of Plymouth. You've got actually the 240th of Luzerne County and the 250th of the USA.
So then how did the idea of the mural bubble up and then become a reality?
Every year we try and have a, not a celebration, but a remembrance on the date of the Avondale disaster. And we were trying to figure out what could we do this year that's not the same as every year. And then we started incorporating ideas of how would this look to have this type of display and that type of display. And it just worked its way. And, you know, we see murals throughout the valley. Hey, wouldn't that be nice to have a nice mining scene of the miners coming out of the Avondale mine?
Plus, we were dedicating a bench to our former president of the Plymouth Historical, Steve Kondrat. And the wall is right behind the bench.
One of the things we know is that you're a native of Plymouth, are you, Joel?
I am.
You're the one who was commissioned to do this piece. How did you get together with the Historical Society?
They reached out to one of my students, Bernie Paremba, and he let me know. And we met up and discussed the project and to me, it was a tremendous honor. It's my roots. It's where I come from. It's part of, you know, everyone who lives there. So it was important to me to make this happen.
Had you been to the site when you were growing up in Plymouth, or did you know much of the
design? I didn't know as much as I do now through my research, but I had rode my bike past it many times when I was a child.
And your life has taken you to the world of visual arts, and you have a remarkable resume, a pedigree, award-winning examples of your work. When you were growing up in Plymouth, were you sketching in your high school notebooks, your elementary school books?
Pretty much all the time. Yeah, it was always part of me. I never really knew what I was going to do, but I just continued doing it. Just found myself here.
Did you have anybody in your family who was an artist?
I had an aunt that was in our background, and, you know, that was kind of some inspiration when I was younger.
And you have chosen to work in a style that is exacting, really. It is something that our listeners may not know, but there is a remarkable teacher known internationally here in our area who specializes in this way of working. Tell us about Trompe L'œil. People might know that.
He was one of my mentors. We actually went to college together, and then I ended up studying with Anthony Wajoulis.
Did seeing his work draw you into that way of working yourself?
It was one of our instructors that we studied with. He really emphasized that technique. But then a few years later, seeing what Anthony was doing, he was pushing the boundaries. So that really lit a fire under me also.
And the style we're talking about looks back to the Renaissance, does it, in a certain sense?
Yeah, it does. It goes back even to ancient Greece.
I say trompe l'œil, but tell us what it is.
It literally means fool the eye, the French word. But I mean, it looks like you could actually pick the objects up off of the surface of, you know, a two-dimensional surface.
Almost photographic realism or something like that?
Yeah, it definitely teases with your senses.
And so when you were approached about doing the mural, where did you start? Did you start with your research?
Archival photographs. I was just looking for imagery for several days, but I wanted to create an image that didn't project the tragedy rather than celebrate. I wanted to celebrate the lives and the work ethic of the people that the people where I came from.
Had you done murals before?
I think I started about 5 years ago. I usually do one a year. I never really considered it. And then when someone approached me with the idea, it was a different kind of challenge. And even the materials were foreign. They're acrylic paint. I'm an oil painter, so it dries very quickly.
If we go up into Scranton, there is at least one in Scranton that is that sense of a trompe l'œil, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that was mine. Yeah, so, I was the first artist for the Scranton Tomorrow project.
And what's the subject of that mural?
It was a vaudeville theme. It was a woman on a tightrope. And that was my first one.
Well, then you saw the archival images. You've grown up in Plymouth. You get a sense of the work ethic. How about the scale of the site? Did you have to weigh in on what you needed?
Yeah, we discussed together. And I mean, what Jim did, he created the perfect substrate for the longevity of this mural. Because, you know, the original wall, as he discussed, was degrading. So I work on polytab, so whatever you put that on, it takes the shape and form of the surface. So he created the perfect canvas that's water resistant, and it couldn't be any better. It was awesome.
What about the scale? When you're doing your regular work, let's put it that way, you're working with oils and you're teaching at your atelier, what scale do you generally?
I'm a relatively small scale oil painter, so it's a little bit different. As far as the process, I'll scale things up and project basic contours and shadow patterns, and usually 5 foot sections at a time. And I'll work from my iPad, you know, a small screen. So you still have to make sure you don't lose the drawing. It's a different process, but it's really all relative once you figure it out.
And you really have depicted a number of miners. Are they composites? Are there images of miners you've seen and sort of absorbed as part of your process?
They are a composite. You know, I might have pulled a miner from here and there and then created, you know, the image together. But most of them did come from actual photographs, but I just created like a montage.
And what's the scene? What's the backdrop for the mural?
The backdrop is the actual work, the people underground in the mines. And then I wanted to create the foreground is, you know, the people in light. That's kind of the life of it. So it's work and real life.
And what about a color palette then?
That was a little challenging because, you know, back then there weren't color photographs. So I just worked with a black and white backdrop. Some of them were old illustrations, and the images in the foreground, they were photographs, so I just gave them kind of like a sepia toned. So I kind of had to keep everything within a pretty limited palette.
When we see the mural, will we know it's yours, Joel, in the fact that it has that quality that you're known for in terms of the ability to be photographic or being able to reach out and touch these images?
Yeah, to a degree. Once you become recognized for something, you have to maintain that quality. So that's pretty much what I'm known for.
Okay, those of you who have seen it, you have to weigh in. Joe, when did you see it and what are you feeling about it?
Well, actually, I was in awe. It wasn't completed, but when we started communicating about what he was doing, he said, I thank you for creating a wall that was actually a foot more than I needed. It gave me latitude as far as what I needed to do to make the mural work. So, you know, that made me feel good. I was in awe of what I saw. And just until recently, because at that time he had, I'm calling it a matting for the outline of the mural itself. And he said, well, I think I'm going to use a special black paint, and that will be what will encompass the painting, bring everything out. And for the first time yesterday, I saw that. So I was even more impressed. I'm really, really happy about the way things turned out.
I was surprised about how lifelike the figures are, that it's just not a painting. They're actually like people figures that could come to life and speak to you that are actually working there.
That's important because when we talk about disasters, we have to remember the people who were lost at Avondale weren't just silhouettes. They were flesh and blood.
Yeah, absolutely.
Just every time I go down there, I'm like in awe of it. And it was funny. We had a gentleman from the Nanticoke Conservation Club volunteer to help. And he came up after we were looking at the mural, and he said, you know, I ran into some guy leaving. He didn't know it was Joel, the artist. He said, he was a nice guy, and I stopped pulling up, and I just looked, and my mouth dropped. And it's, oh, my God, look at that. So when people see it, they will be happy.
And that's what you work for, to do your best and to bring your training and your heart and the fact that it's your people. That's the kind of response that you
absolutely
hope.
Absolutely. Yeah, and I mean, especially with public art, it's for everyone. Everyone gets to enjoy it. And it was an honor to create this for Plymouth, for this historical society and the community.
And what's going to happen then on the dedication day?
Well, we created a cover, and it is going to be unveiled. We're going to have the presentation at 10 o'clock in the morning on Sunday, September 13th, and everyone is invited. It is a little bit out of the way to get there. It is in Plymouth Township, and you have to drive down, and there's a gate that's going to be open, and we will have signs giving direction how to get to the site. I hope that everybody will come and see the mural.
Members of the Plymouth Historical Society, Joe Slusser, Society President, Patrick Smith, Vice President, Board Member Jim Mules, they were here with the artist, Joel Carson Jones, speaking with us about the unveiling and dedication of the Avondale Coal Mine mural on Sunday, September 13th at 10 a.m., followed by an open house at 2. In celebration of the 40th anniversary of the Plymouth Historical Society, The event will take place commemorating the 108 miners and two rescuers lost in the 1869 Avondale mining disaster and all those who worked in the mines. It will be dedicated at the site, and there will be directions and signs to the site. There will be speakers, refreshments will follow, and admission is free. The Avondale mine site is located off Route 11 in Plymouth Township. The Plymouth Historical Society itself is located at 115 Gaylord Avenue in Plymouth. And they have a website that is a little bit long, but you'll remember it. It is Plymouth Historical Society, Luzerne, COPA.org. It is Plymouth Historical Society, Luzerne, COPA.org.